Everyone, thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. You're listening to episode 9 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Amber M. Stamper. Amber is an assistant professor of English in the Department of Language, Literature, and Communication at Elizabeth City State University. She has a PhD in English with a concentration in rhetoric from the University of Kentucky, an MFA in poetry writing from the University of Virginia, and an MA in humanities from Johns Hopkins University. In the volume 32, issue of the Christian Research Journal, Amber has written an article for our Postmodern Realities column called The Graven Images of Social Media, A Visual Rhetorical Approach. Amber, it's good to have you on.
It's good to be here.
Well, why don't you explain a little bit about visual rhetoric that's in your title. So what is a visual rhetorical approach?
Okay, so rhetoric is an incredibly old field of study. It actually goes all the way back to ancient Greece and Rome with the philosophers Socrates and Plato sort of being the first to define the field. And rhetoric is defined as the art of persuasion. And of course, back in ancient Greece, this applied predominantly, maybe even exclusively, to verbal persuasion. So speeches, persuading people on political issues or to vote for candidates. But as this field of study evolved, scholars started looking at the ways things beyond the spoken word can persuade us. And so visual rhetoric is a much more modern scholarly preoccupation, and it's the study of the way images or visuals persuade us, or more simply even the way images can communicate a message, and advertising, I guess, would be the prototype.
So why is the visual rhetoric a useful lens for interpreting and analyzing social media? And also, I want you to address, when did this particular field of study, you said it's more modern, when did this come to be academically?
Okay, so academically, probably around the 50s and 60s was when visual rhetoric started to come to the fore. The study of rhetoric has gone through a gradual broadening in scope over time. So as I was saying, in ancient Greece and Rome, it was limited to the spoken word. Gradually, the written word was incorporated in the 16th century with the rise of printing. And then in the 20th century, with the rise of advertising, visuals began to be incorporated. And of course, now we have multimedia texts that can be analyzed in terms of how they persuade us. So an ad that we see on TV has maybe some text in it. It also has images. It also has the spoken word. So rhetoric and what we consider as a text that has the ability to persuade has sort of expanded over time. But I think visual rhetoric is an especially useful lens for interpreting and analyzing social media, because images really have become the, one of the primary modes of communication on social media. We have media like Instagram, which is purely image with a small amount of text, and now, of course, it allows for video. Tumblr is largely image-based in a lot of cases. And even in the more seemingly text-based social media formats like Facebook or Twitter, we identify ourselves in these media by a profile picture, by cover photos. Memes have become popular, of course. And if you even just look at the statistics on social media, images, the sharing of images is growing exponentially. It's as popular as sharing things like status updates, which are texts, or tweets that are completely text. So in the article, for example, one of the issues I shared was that by 2013, Facebook users had uploaded over 250 billion photos. And if you look at stats on Instagram, it's increasing at exactly the same kind of rate. At first, it was about 70 million photos per day. There have been over 30 billion photos since the network's launch. I mean, the image sharing is the way we communicate on social media in a lot of cases. So studying the way these images are impacting the audience can be useful as a mode of interpreting social media.
So thinking about how images work in terms of the church and for Christians, how can we look at the church's historic relationship with images in terms of the present? I know in the past, the church, especially back during the time of the Reformation, before that, the church used like paintings, for example, to express theological views that they had, the Roman Catholic Church, for example.
Yes. Okay, so the issue at hand with images in the church has always been one of what constitutes idolatry. And during different periods in church history, images have been more or less out of favor. I may have the opportunity to talk later on about how popular images were in the very early church, but basically when you read texts on the history of image use in the church, the trend we see is that when Catholicism dominated, images were incredibly popular as a mode of worship. Icons were popular, so three-dimensional visuals. And the sale and production of Christian images really flourished during the rise of the Catholic Church. But as you mentioned, part of the Reformation was purging the church of what were seen as sort of unnecessary or decorative or even idolatrous elements. And so if you read, for example, John Calvin's Institutes of the Christian Religion, he is in opposition to the use of icons in worship. And if you even look at something like the architecture of early Protestant churches, they're very sparse, very bare. There's no, I mean, you don't find something like the Sistine Chapel in a Protestant church or early Protestant churches for that exact reason. They wanted very pure spaces where worship became more interior, intellectual, rather than visual. So that's been sort of the historic trend. Obviously, in I would say from the 1950s up, the church has become heavily invested in the use of images, and now we can drive down the road and see billboards with pictures advertising churches. There are all kinds of product lines put out by evangelical businesses. For example, the Not of This World line, where there are images combined with text on T-shirts and on headbands and on bumper stickers. And we've got all kinds of investment now in the Christian film industry. So it seems like the church in its current state is sort of at a level of acceptance with imagery that maybe, especially for the Protestant church in the past, was not the case. So it's interesting to watch the trends and the sort of theological justifications for embracing or rejecting images, but it certainly has always been something the church has grappled over to varying degrees.
What would you say Scripture says about image use? I mean, questions that we get here revolve around the second commandment in terms of depicting God or Christ in images.
Right. So Exodus 24, the second commandment, says, and this is the New International Version, "You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below." And then perhaps the more often heard version is the King James, "Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image." And of course, there it's to a certain extent open to interpretation. What exactly does that mean to make an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath? So we can say we shouldn't depict God, maybe, but then we have anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath. So what are the limits on that? And I think that ambiguity is why we've seen these vastly swinging trends in the church, from seemingly complete acceptance to complete rejection to reaching some kind of middle ground. But yeah, you're right, it does revolve around that second commandment, the graven images. What constitutes a graven image?
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Amber M. Stamper, who has written an article for our Postmodern Realities column for the Volume 39, Number 2 issue of the Christian Research Journal. Her article is called The Graven Images of Social Media, A Visual Rhetorical Approach. To read her article, please subscribe to the journal. You can get a subscription, for which is 6 issues for $39.50, and to subscribe, go to equip.org. We were just talking about scripture and what it says about the second commandment, but I just want to pivot a little bit and ask you personally, how do images impact us viewers? Do they impact us more strongly than other means of communication, like, you know, reading, for example, a book?
The short answer is yes. And there is a biological component to this in which studies have been done that show that actually the parts of our brain that are responsible for things like decision making are basically short-circuited to a certain extent when we look at images. This is why visual advertising is so impactful. It's because something about looking at images makes us desire things, makes us more impulsive. So there is a biological component to this. But even if we're just thinking about, for example, we have the saying, a picture's worth a thousand words. If you think about the difference between maybe reading an essay on how many children are starving in Africa, is that going to have a greater or lesser impact on you than seeing even just one picture of a starving child, you know, standing in dirt with flies swarming around him in sub-Saharan Africa? The image is going to tug on your heartstrings a thousand times more than the written essay. Something about visualizing, and especially visualizing humanity in that kind of predicament, impacts us emotionally as well as intellectually. And so this matters because if used inappropriately, images have the ability to short-circuit our logical thinking, which is how we end up doing things like impulse buying stuff off infomercials and that kind of thing.
I do want to mention to our listeners that several years ago, the journal has published an article about the scientific research regarding the brain and images in an article we did on pornography called The Porn and the Male Brain. And you can find that article for free on equip.org. So if images impact us very strongly, you know, like you were giving the example of seeing an image of a starving child versus reading about one, why do you think it matters that it impacts us so strongly?
You brought up an article on pornography. So of course that would be one example. Because images are so powerful, we need to be cautious of how we use them, and we also should be aware of how we're responding to them. So when we put ourselves in an environment like social media, which the experience of social media is basically scrolling down a timeline, regardless of whether you're on Instagram or whether you're on Twitter or whether you're on Facebook. It's the same basic type of experience. And when we're dealing with images, that's essentially an inundation of imagery. And if every single image, if we allow every single image to impact us without actively considering that impact, then we're putting ourselves in a position where we might be adopting false beliefs, false thoughts. We might not be thinking as critically as we should be. So it's important to understand that images work powerfully both so that we can use them appropriately and conscientiously and respond to them with awareness.
I would say, too, just briefly mention pornography, but in terms of images on social media, for example, Pinterest, I mean, you know, you could be, which is used mostly by women, more women use Pinterest than men do. And, you know, you can just see thousands and thousands, if not millions of pictures of, you know, decorating or recipes or other things that you, so it's not just pornography. I think there's just an inundation of images of whatever your personal interest might be. So what are, thinking about social media, just talking about that, what are some of the pitfalls that we need to be aware of as we use social media, especially in terms of images?
I think probably the top idea to keep in mind is to understand that the point of social media is the social aspect. We tend to get into this frame of mind where everything is about sharing our beliefs or responding often in a knee-jerk way to other people's beliefs. But really, I think where the strength of social media is in the way it sets us up for conversations. So my thought is that if we're going to share an image, be prepared and even encourage conversation about it, because I think the best use of social media is when you can have the conversation. So don't just drop the images and run, and the same way goes for don't just drop a comment on someone else's image and run. Be open to dialogue, because I think that's where really social media is a unique benefit that our society has, and it's at its best when it's encouraging conversation.
So what are some ways that images can be used in a positive manner, and how are they used in a powerful manner?
I think, in my experience with social media, that the best use of images theologically is when they're seen and used as a form of praise. Anne Boskamp is one of the best users, I believe, of images on social media, and she just shares these beautiful pictures of her simple everyday life, and sometimes it's something as quirky and interesting as like a zoomed in picture of a wooden table where you get to really see like the grooves in the wood. Just helps you see the beauty of the world in a way that you may not in an everyday situation. So I think one of the real most powerful uses theologically is as that sort of, it helps us to see the world in a frame of mind of worship, even in very simple things, because we all have access to cameras now. I mean, anyone can zoom in on their dining room table and take a picture of how cool wood looks like up close, but you can share that with people now and maybe have them, you know, appreciate their life a little bit more. And I think that kind of positive, praise-oriented component of social media is both needed and wonderful.
I also want to bring our listeners' attention to an article that we have written that includes a look at Anne Boskamp, and it's called Developing Discernment in Devotional Reading, and it is also available free online at equip.org. So you talked a little bit about images, using them positively. Do you think that we can use them as a mode of evangelism on social media?
Absolutely. And this is where I was hoping to get a chance to talk about the early church, because one of my absolute favorite scholars, Avril Cameron, wrote a book on image use and icon use in the early church. And her argument is basically that the use of both two-dimensional and three-dimensional visuals were among the most common, the most powerful, and the most impactful of early evangelistic tools. Obviously, the literacy levels in the early church were different from our current situation. There wasn't access to the biblical text like we have now. And so even though at the time in a lot of circles, use of images was considered sort of a pagan tradition, it was very popular and very effective for evangelism because people couldn't read. They didn't have access to the text if they could read. And so seeing pictures of, for example, Paul or Peter or even Jesus was the primary and one of the best modes of evangelism in the early church. And I think it can work in that same way now. So we have evangelistic tools like film versions of the Gospels, for example, the Jesus film or the Passion of the Christ. And all of those, I think, are very effective modes of evangelism. Because like I was mentioning before about the way images persuade us, seeing, being able to visualize right in front of your face something like a Bible story can persuade us in a way that maybe just reading an evangelistic tract would not.
So what social media platforms do you think use images well?
Okay, I'm going to give a plug for Christ and Pop Culture. which is awesome. I've written for them before, which is why I say it's a plug. But I think they do a great job with image use. They have some really wonderful illustrators for their articles. Seth Hahn is one of them. But I was on Twitter the other day. I'm not personally on Twitter, but sometimes I go on Twitter and look around and see what other people are doing. And I love Christ in Pop Culture because they'll share these images that are so, they just perk your curiosity. And all the images, and I think this is what's smart and the reason why I say they use images well, all the images link to an article. So the other day I was scrolling along and this image comes through of a woman in a purple ballet dress. It's like a tutu, and she's standing on a scale, like the kind you weigh yourself on, and her head is outside the frame of the picture. So it's basically just a torso of a woman in a ballet dress standing on a scale. And I was thinking, what is that about? That's a really interesting picture. And then you click on it, and it links you to an article. So this is what I meant by the greatest strength of social media is conversation. The article explains to you in more detail about what this image means. It was talking about beauty standards. And then there's conversation on Christ in Pop Culture's Facebook page, their Twitter account. So the image becomes a way of linking us into conversation. And they had another really great one also recently. It was an image of Donald Trump giving the peace sign, and behind him there's like this city going up in flames. And I mean, I could not click on it. I was like, what in the world is going on here? And it linked you to an article and, of course, conversation from that article. So I would say they're one of my favorite, in addition to Ann Voskam, whom I mentioned earlier.
A lot of your comments are allowing me to mention articles in our journal. And
I did not plan that.
Yes, and Seth Hane has written for us before on manga. So we do have an article on manga that is for free on equip.org, and that is definitely a visual form of communication. And so if you want to read about that, please go to equip.org. So finally, what about your own personal practice of image use online or on social media? What do you do?
Okay. Well, I actually recently have gotten almost entirely off of social media, although at one time I was very involved on all social media platforms, except for I do have a Facebook profile that is limited basically to just family, and I use it mostly for Messenger. But I'll tell you, one of the main reasons why I made that decision was because I had several friends tell me that in particular, the images on their social media accounts were hurting their feelings in different ways. For example, I have a friend who is infertile, and she told me just how devastating it is for her to see, you know, people sharing pictures of their family totally innocently, but like their children, their baby pictures. And it just, I mean, that's the kind of thing that a lot of people don't even think about when they share an image of their newborn, that one of their friends might be dealing with infertility. So who could fault them for sharing that? But, you know, that's the kind of environment that social media is. You can't always factor in everyone's feelings. You have, to a certain extent, a mass audience. And one of the things I've learned from studying rhetoric is that audience awareness is very important for communication. Knowing who you're speaking to and the best way of communicating with them. So, for example, I share an image of my beautiful twin sons online. 99% of my friends are going to love that and think that's so cute, and they're so happy to see my family. And then there's that 1% of my audience who is just like, oh, I wish I had even just one son. And I had another friend recently who is going through a divorce, and she was telling me about how, you know, she's been on Facebook since 2006, I think she said, or maybe a little bit later. But she's going through and she's like deleting pictures of her wedding and when they were dating, and it was just awful. She doesn't want the public record anymore. And I think sometimes we fall into the trap, I know I certainly did, of using Facebook as sort of a, like, my family photo album. I put every picture on my phone, I would upload it there, and I've found other means for myself. Like, I'm printing pictures now and making a real baby book for my children and that kind of thing. And I'm just at this point right now where I would rather have the kind of interactions I was having on social media in private. So in part, that decision was due to image use. But that is not to say that there are not people who are using images awesomely online. And I, as I was saying, I get on all the time and look at what other people are doing. So it's still a really cool platform for image sharing.
Well, this has been a very thoughtful conversation. And if you go to equip.org, we do have other articles that address this issue and also related issues to media ecology, like we talked about today. But finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Amber. So, Amber, what is the last thing that you cooked and ate?
Oh, boy. Pizza. The last thing I cooked was pizza. The last thing I ate was a pack of crackers.
The beach or the mountains?
Beach.
What's your favorite form of exercise?
The elliptical.
And what is one of your favorite hobbies?
Horseback riding.
And what are two things on your to-do list this week?
I am going to fill out all of these grade forms for my students. And I am also going to go to the shooting range that just opened near my house.
Well, thank you so much, Amber, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Amber Stamper has an article in the Volume 39, Number 2 issue of the Christian Research Journal in our Postmodern Realities column called The Graven Images of Social Media, A Visual Rhetorical Approach. You'll want to read this article and to subscribe to the journal, which is 6 issues for a 1-year subscription. It's $39.50, and go to equip.org. Be sure you also tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you go to equip.org, where you can download our free smartphone app on which you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live, listen to previous broadcasts, make a donation, and subscribe to the Christian Research Journal.